Dave Pryor. Welcome to the Reluctant Agilist. Today I'm here with Jim Benson and Mark Kilby, and we're going to talk all about distributed teams. And thank you, gentlemen, for being here today.
Our pleasure. Yeah,
thanks, Dave.
So what's awesome about this for me is that when people ask me about distributed teams, there's two things I talk about. I talk about, Jim, the study that you and Tony Ann did, and I always reference a thing about the one flight of stairs being the biggest distance or the biggest hardship for teams. And then I'm saying, and you have to go buy Mark and Joanna's book because it has answers to every single question you have. this is like a super team up here. You've built a course together.
Yeah, so now we have more answers.
That's right. All the answers.
All the answers.
So what's the setup for the course?
Well, Modus Institute started with a course on distributed teams. And one of the first students of that class was Mark. So literally for the entire history of the school, Mark and Tony Ann and I have been working together and apart on distributed teams. And what led to this class was that, of course, COVID hits and the whole nature of location and work changed. So before it was like either we have a co-located team or we have a distributed team. But now there's so many permutations, and then there's, you know, silly things like, you know, hybrid work and whatnot, where you have to come to work 3 days a week. And it's like, no one has come up with a way to make that work except us. And so what Mark and I wanted to do was make sure that we not only made a class to teach people, you know, kind of what we'd learned working with all of these distributed teams over the years, but also to create a community of people who were constantly working in this because the field was evolving so quickly.
Okay.
And will keep evolving. It's you know, it's not going to end. I mean, actually, there was hybrid before the pandemic. Right. It was just hidden hybrid where people were sneak off and work, you know, like one day at home. So.
Or from a coffee shop or wherever. All right. So can you talk a little bit about the community aspect and the Modus spin on it? Because I'm assuming this isn't just like a show up and find out, like, how do I deal with my team 12 time zones away? How do I meet people, turn their camera on? There's more to it than that, right?
It is. We didn't talk so much about how to make people turn their camera on. We talked more about how to create a culture in your team that was supporting and worked to make workflow.
Okay.
And when you have those things, people tend to turn their camera on because there's a reason why they're in the call. So people turn their cameras off sometimes because they have bad head,
right?
But more often because they actually don't want to see them working on their phone or doing something else. When people are engaged, then they're engaged. So we just want to raise that level of alignment and engagement. And that can't happen unless the class itself is a community. So the class needs its own alignment and its engagement.
Okay.
Yeah. As part of that, we talk about concepts like drift, which is when things go out of alignment. And how do you figure out when that happens? We do get into other topics such as mental health. How do you make sure you're not wrestling with, you know, loneliness, anxiety, or how do you detect those and do something about it, or reach out to your team, or your team reaches out to you to help with that? So we tackle some of those more interesting topics.
Okay. Does that include people with different styles? Like, I know that I have some colleagues who very much need connection and are constantly like that in the cartoons, the little guy that's pestering Foghorn Leghorn, like, hey. And other people that are like, just leave me alone, let me do my thing. And like, and creating that balance can be really tough for people.
Yeah, so the advice is not go away, kid, you bother me.
No.
This is really funny for me because when we started this class, we thought it was going to be about 16 videos long, and it ended up being over 30 because the nature of human interaction and collaboration is so deep, says the guy that seems surprised about that after writing a 350-page book on it. and so rather than focus on specific interaction styles like introvert or extrovert or different parts on your color wheel or your, you know, KPMG chart or whatever it might be,
right.
We focus instead on what are we doing and what's expected of us and other people in doing it.
Okay.
The team is able to set up what they're expected to do and why. And they're negotiating with that. And at that point, it is also expected that people are being honest about, like, you know what? I saturate at about 3 hours of exposure to other people. Can we structure my work so that I don't become oversaturated? Or I tend to become really lonely if I don't talk to anyone on a regular basis. Can we structure my work that way? And then you don't only divide your team up by learning style or right. by the workflow, but also just by like the actual nuts and bolts of who you are.
So this seems a little bit at odds with all the people I know who've had keyboard trackers installed to make sure that they're doing enough stuff on their screen all day long. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, that's Mark.
Well, the key to that one is just have your cat keep walking over the keyboard. That's the easy one.
I have 11 keyboards hooked up and 5 cats.
This it seems to me like that whole remote versus on-site thing. It used to be that people would assume if you weren't in the office, you were just like screwing off all day watching Netflix or whatever. But now it seems a lot more weaponized, the way that companies who've got all this real estate they have to fill are demanding that people show up on site. I mean, like, mm-hmm. I'm somebody, you make me come into an office, I'm a third as productive as I would be if you left me at home.
I'm not sure that I personally buy that anybody is more or less productive when they are in a certain location. But what I am certain of is if you understand your work, you will be super productive and you'll be super effective and you will super enjoy your work.
Okay.
So one of the things that we say in the hybrid work section is that if you are part of a team that is sometimes co-located and sometimes not, then you have to treat your time together like a gift. You know, treat it with respect wow. and make sure that when you're together, you're like, okay, today we could work on this thing, but we're going to be together on Wednesday. And then this would be better if we did this collaboratively in a room with a whiteboard. Okay. So you specifically schedule those kind of like rapid back and forth collaborations or things that require multiple simultaneous conversations.
Yeah.
You schedule those when you're in the office.
Okay.
Yeah. This is actually why. I was really glad that Jim asked to do this course, because the book that Johanna and I wrote, we talk about principles, we give a lot of tactical, practical advice, but we avoided a framework like the plague. There's enough frameworks out there. We didn't want to put yet another framework out there. And Jim didn't do that either. Instead, Jim, with his right environment approach that he talks about in the collaboration equation, really gives a toolkit for you to build your own framework, the framework that fits your organization, your environment, not trying to adopt mm-hmm. somebody else's, because it may or may not work.
I think that, I love talking about the right environment stuff because it's so powerful in that it makes it the team's responsibility to decide.
Yeah.
What they want to fix and how they want to fix. And so it would be on me then to say to the people on my team, like, I'm no good before 10 o'clock in the morning, but I'm happy to have a call at 1 a.m. if you want to. Like, this is my chronotype. This is when I'm better for collaboration. Like, I have to know that about myself and then be with people that'll honor that, and we can find a way to create stuff together.
Or going back to that example of, hey, I really need to be in the office. Okay, well, let's talk about that, and let's honor that gift and figure out, all right, what kind of work do we want to do together face to face, and what what other types of work do people need focus time in? They need to, you know, they need that quiet space, whether it's in the office, working at home, or somewhere else.
So is this, there's this, some people I work with talk about working in the system and working on the system. And this would be working on the system of how you and your colleagues are collaborating remotely, or however you're doing it, whether you're distributed or not, or to what extent you are. You are spending a lot of intentional time designing your own path.
And then having a system to work in that you understand and can believe in.
Okay.
Yeah. And also,
if you don't create the system, if you don't invest in the system, you can't own it.
Okay.
And that means you've got to keep working on the system. So that gets to that idea of continuous improvement. You can't assume the same system will work all the way through, you know, delivering a project, program, product, whatever. Things will break, just like any system. So you've got to take a look back. And you've got to step out of the system again to work on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are the people that are coming to the class? I mean, because I know that they're taking it as a self-paced right now, but you're going to have a guided version coming up, right?
Yep.
Right. Okay. What are the biggest problems they're trying to solve when they show up right now?
So what's been expressed so far? Well, we'll just say where people have expressed gratitude for the class so far. Has been in the kind of that modus message, like underlying all of our classes, is that you can't set up a process if you don't have a culture to support it. And you can't have a culture if your process is working against it. And so that sounds like a lot of consultancy stuff, but what it actually is designing the actual system of the team. And people were like, you know, I was trying to be lean, or I was trying to be agile, or I was trying to be this because these books told me how. And the problem that they're trying to solve is that regardless of how well a canned process works when you first start to do it, gradually two things are going to happen. One is people are no longer going to be surprised that they can improve things.
Okay.
Because that's usually the first bit of success is people are like, oh my God, I can actually do something.
Yeah.
But then after a while, they're like, oh my God, I have to do something every week. And it's like, that's right, cupcake. and the less time that they've taken to actually build the system, there's going to be an overwhelming number of things to change.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So the problem that people are trying to solve is like, how can I calm my system enough where continuous improvement doesn't become my full-time job and that it actually gives me ROI? It actually gives me an ability to say, last week I could get this thing out in this amount of time. Now I can get it out faster, better, smarter, healthier, you know. And Mark and I tend to focus on the smarter and healthier side because the other ones follow.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot like, you know, we have other systems that we constantly need to maintain, like our house and our car. If you let it go, your car will grind into a halt, or your house will have some part of it fall off, and you don't want that. But it's funny how many people resist improving their work system, their work environment.
One thing to note about kind of the zeitgeist of what we're talking about is when I was in London last year, I was staying in Canary Wharf, and in Canary Wharf, there's a huge HSBC building that like looms over all of Canary Wharf. And they were in the process of shutting down that building and moving to a much smaller space in central London because the people weren't coming to work.
Space, yeah.
But what they didn't do was consider, we're HSBC, we're one of the largest companies on the planet. We've got a billion people running around. Okay, not a billion, but we got a lot of people running around in the company. What they could have done was convert like two floors of that space into like extended stay hotel. And then they could have made the rest of that colo space for the global enterprise and then fitted that out to be all on-site, off-site work. So no, like you're part of a FinServe group that, you're part of a FinServe group that has people in Asia and South Africa and States and blah, 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 blah. They can all come, they can all stay for free on site. And then they have all of these other floors that are completely kitted out for that type of direct tactile collaboration.
Right.
And what we're, the problem now is like we're dividing people up into kind of like this, you have to be in the office or you don't, not why do we get together? What is the ROI on actually getting together or working in a certain way?
So there's this big part of me that wants to challenge some of what you're saying. And I'm looking at right now at the outline for the, or the how do we balance productivity and accountability thing from the course page. A lot of what I know that, that Modus is trying to do, and Jim, you've said this a bunch of times, is like work with people that give a damn, people that are going to take the time to ask the question of, well, what else could we do with this space? How could we foster better collaborative environments for our remote staff or whatever? But what I find is people want is like, how do I deal with the time zone issue? How do I make sure they're not watching Netflix all day? They don't, there's a lack of trust. There's a lack of, they just want like the easy button. They just want to fix this one problem. They don't want to actually look at the system.
Well, they assume that the system is human beings typing.
Yeah, well, that's true. They, right. It's very Frederick Taylor-y, very Animal Farm, right?
But that's right. That's right. So those, the pigs that are living in the house there are like, you know, how do I know that the rest of these stupid two-legged or four-legged animals aren't doing their work?
Yeah.
So here's the question. What is your goal from this processing unit that you call a team or a group or team of teams or what have you? And then is that value being realized? And if that value is being realized at or below the cost that you expected to pay for it, then you don't care.
Yeah.
You know, what you do care is if somebody is gaming the system and then screwing over their colleagues. But if the work is visualized and everybody knows what's going on, the team is already self-policing in that way. And the way that upper management polices is they say, okay, so we got together, we agreed that this was going to be an outcome. Mm-hmm. And that, and two things happened. That outcome wasn't achieved. And I don't know why. Okay. If upper management doesn't know why and the work is visualized, then that's on upper management. That's like you weren't paying attention to the visual controls that were set up. If it gets to the end and you say you didn't achieve, then that's a failure across the board. Because there needs to be feedback loops in there in the visual controls saying, like, we hit a snag, we did a pivot, we did this, we did that. And that we got to our goal, but in a way that we didn't expect to. So lots of times teams will achieve their goal and then they'll go to give it to customer, and customer will say, what is this? And they'll say, that's where we ended up. And they're like, that's not where I expected you to end up. Where they ended up was perfectly reasonable, but it just doesn't match customer expectations. So the goal here isn't like spy on people. The goal here is set reasonable expectations and then have some collaborative way to manage that.
Okay. So is it fair to say that the outcome for somebody taking this program is they become better at instantiating and supporting and fostering a space where people could work in a distributed way, as opposed to just like, when you were talking about it earlier, I was thinking like, you should just make a poster and then people could buy that and your framework and you'd be rich. You could drive a Ferrari and nobody would do it right, and you could charge them for consulting. but this is people actually becoming stewards of an environment and not only building, but supporting and honing that environment to always, because you have to adjust it constantly, right?
Yeah. Well, Mark, do you want to answer that a little bit?
Yeah. So I the one word that I kind of about was the cloning part. You can certainly grab parts of that, but it's really what, again, creating that environment that works well for that particular team in that particular setting. I've been in many large organizations where they want everyone to follow the same process.
Yeah.
Or the same framework. We'll okay. That way. And how well does that work? Not usually as well as you would expect. So it sounds good in theory, but you really need to give the teams some agency to make adjustments for what they need. And okay. also to let them also build the communications and the relationships with other parts of the organization rather than having somebody from on high try to manage that. So yeah. kind of going back to what Jim said, you know, collaboratively kind of checking in as a leader. Great. How do you broker some of those relationships within the organization? If you've got multiple teams that need to coordinate to get a product out, not mm-hmm. you okay. being the blocker for all the communications between those yeah. teams.
So that's
some of what we try to encourage in this class. It's like, this is how you need to rethink how you build these right environments.
So it's not just for team members. It's for, would it be for managers or leaders as well who are looking for the output of those teams?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yeah. 'Cause I'm wondering how we create safety for them. I mean, if I'm saying like, okay, figure out how you want to work, but I have to give stuff to the board about our progress and I'm used to Gantt charts and things like that. I mean, how do I, as a manager, as a person who's got to take the output of the team, how do I get what I need out of this? Or how do I become part of it without right. interrupting it?
So the scribbled quote at the top of my highly marked up book of, that I wrote is, you have to manage the change you wish to see.
Okay.
So management is collaborative. Okay. And so the reason that all teams have always struggled to get work done is because we've put off we've externalized self-control.
Okay.
So even in Agile, we say that teams are supposed to be self-organizing, but then we have PMs and Scrum Masters and product owners that take over a lot of that management role, mm-hmm. which means that you can't self-organize because you're not actually organizing.
Okay.
So then self-organizing just means I choose what work I want to do on a specific day. And that's not self-organizing. That's just self-prioritizing, which is highly different.
Okay.
So what I thought was interesting was, and the reason I actually first pulled up that page was there were actually five principles in here. And the other day we were on a collaboration equation book club call, and there was a guy there from a major airline who said that when he went to work with his teams, the first thing he did was, he, just like you said a second ago, he made a poster out of the five principles and then put that up in the meeting room. And the first thing that the people said was, "What the hell is this?" And then he said to them, "Tell me which one you want me to remove and I'll take it down." And they looked at it and they're like, "This is pretty good." So, and I just closed the book because that's the way things work. But the important thing there is that when we're building any collaborative environment, we're forced to talk about the fact that we have to maintain it. And that sounds like a pain in the butt and no one wants to go in that direction.
Yeah.
But the truth is that once you get the system set up, the maintenance is trivial.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, it's really hard to mow your lawn if you wait until August to do it. But it's really easy to mow your lawn if you do it every couple of weeks.
Yeah. There's a part of me that feels like the maintenance is one of the things that becomes the most enjoyable because you're constantly finding little ways to tweak it and make it work better for everybody. I mean, that studying of it.
And we also need to recognize that there literally are people on our teams that hate doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they are a far fewer number than all of the people on the team.
Okay. So there's people that should be allowed to just...
to opt out.
Yeah. Plot ahead, yeah. Get stuff done. And other people like me that want to sit around and look at it and go, well, what if we move that like one quarter turn to the left?
Yeah, well, that's a great example, actually, because it's not, it doesn't always involve a meeting, which is another thing that people cringe at. Okay. Continuous improvement can be, oh, I just had a great idea. Let me try something. Or, oh, you don't have time for that. Let me get that for you real quick. So it's those little micro adjustments that also happen.
Okay.
That's what you want to encourage. You want to make it comfortable for people to say, oh yeah, I've got that. I'll take care of it for you.
Okay.
So we were doing a right environment exercise for a distributed team that had previously been co-located during COVID. And they were easing back into hybrid work, okay. But they found that they were caught in this, tension. Yeah. They really wanted to be together because they liked each other, and they really didn't want to go back to the office.
Okay.
So while we were doing the initial value stream map of that, and then later when we were doing the charter, they kept coming back to the, I miss you guys and I don't want to leave my house. So
like me.
yeah. And so it's like all of us because there's a definite benefit to this. Like Tony Ann and Mark and Dave and I were just having this conversation a little bit ago. The other day I got in an email completely unsolicited, an ad saying, here's some really beautiful office space that would be good for modus cooperandi. And I was like, that's weird. It really is good for modus cooperandi. but I don't want to go to an office, but I do want to be with Tony Ann and everybody else.
Yeah.
So here's what they did. While they were going through, they started to figure out the best ways that they could make best use of proximity. So they decided that every week they were going to go to brunch. And there was one place that they loved going to brunch. So they were going to go there 2 weeks out of the month. And then the other 2 weeks, they were going to cycle through other brunch places in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Right. And then there was a rule that said that there was, and it's on their board. I can still show it to people because I still have it, but it was called Let's Get Coffee. And it was that when there was a ticket that needed some kinds of discussion, they could flag the ticket with Let's Get Coffee. Then when they were in their colo days where they were at the main office, they could go downstairs to the coffee shop and do that work over coffee. And then there were others that they would mark mob. And then those were the ones that they would, get a conference room and really go on. So they structured that in a way that was helpful. It wasn't like now is the time when we, do this. but it was the work is now requiring us to do these things and we want to.
Yeah. So it almost sounds like it would be pleasurable and fun to work together if you did that, as opposed to just like you will be in the office 3 days a week at your desk so that you can collaborate with people by banging into them in the hallway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. You, because the way Colo works or the way that hybrid works now is everybody goes and finds a place where no one will talk to them.
Yeah.
And then hoteling desks. Yeah. That are completely separated. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And then they sit there and go, damn it, I don't have my coffee maker. You know, I miss my dog,
Yeah. I had to wear pants.
They gotta wear pants.
What are some things that people are going to get out of this course that they wouldn't get from, I don't know if there's other distributed teams courses because I'm just not aware of people teaching them, but it's definitely something there's a need for. What is it that makes this unique?
Relentless humane practicality.
You will be humane.
So the deal is that what Mark and I have both discovered, I'm going to put words into Mark's mouth, is that if people understand their work and they've had a hand in designing how the work is done, the work will get done faster, of higher quality, and they will have more professional satisfaction when it's completed.
Okay.
Which means that they will be fresher to do the new work. They will become less fatigued. And we can talk about coddling people, but if anybody's ever watched a professional football game, they swap people in and out regularly so that they don't become fatigued. So right, stop with the coddling crap. Human beings only have so much energy, and if you tax that, then you're screwing yourself. You're not squeezing more value out of them. So what okay, we do is we build those systems that balance it and say, what's the maximum production, if you will, that this team can produce, yeah, in a way that the team goes home at night or ends the day, shuts the camera off or whatever, at the same level of energy or better than when they started it.
Okay.
Yeah. And what I, to also answer the question, I am aware of other distributed team courses.
Okay.
There's only one that I've actually taken. I could talk to some of the others because I've seen some of the information. They tend to focus on skills, or so it'll be either skills of the team or skills of the manager, or this is how you structure the team. Boom, and it follows a recipe. Ours is different in that we're looking at how do you collaboratively design this workspace. So it can be the team together. It can be the team with leadership that supports the team, managers in there as well. So they can take it together. They can take it separately, but eventually they'll want to come together to build this right environment.
Okay. So the one,
can I show something?
Yeah. I want to ask while you load it up. I just want to check on one thing. So it seems like the only prerequisite right now is that when you show up, you actually have to give a damn about this stuff working better.
Yeah.
Well, and you're now given the ability to give a damn. So if you don't, if you don't have any investment, any skin in the game, as managers would call it, in the system that you're working in, then you can't improve it. Therefore, you can't give a damn.
Okay.
You can only give a damn about something that you can help. Otherwise, it's just pity.
Okay.
Or resentment. Yeah. One of the two, right?
Yeah.
I pity the fool that has to work here. Oh, crap, that's me. I resent that. So a few minutes ago, you were talking about the value map for this class. And so I just brought it up. And the reason that I brought it up was because I wanted to talk about this particular flow, which is like we want to. When it says strong remote teams here, this is literally because we focus a lot on teams, but there's internal and external relationships of those teams.
Okay.
And so often remote teams will also fail because they build up a really high level of dependencies on external teams to them that they have even a worse level of communication with.
Okay.
So we want to get together and figure out, how does our team deliver and communicate, and what does that look like, which involves also how do we interact with these other groups, and that could be management groups, it could be other production groups, it could be the customer, what have you, but how is it that we communicate and deliver so that we know what to do and when to do it and can act with confidence? Then we want to, like you were mentioning, the balancing productivity and accountability. What we're balancing there really is professional responsibility. So what's the most that I can get out of me and my team that is, again, in a way that doesn't, burn us out? It doesn't create something of low quality, because you can always get more productivity if you want to create crap. One only has to look at X to know that. but what you really want to do is build a system where the team is fully informed of what they're doing, what everybody else is doing.
Okay.
And able to move forward. And this requires a visual system where work and goals and everything are obvious to the whole group, which includes that upper management. And then the last thing is that there's a toolkit.
Well, I want to emphasize on that last point though. And that accountability is bi-directional. So it's not just, Dave, you're accountable for this. It's you're also expecting some accountability from the others that are expecting things from you, whether it's leadership or other team members.
Okay.
So I wanted to jump in and emphasize that. Sorry, Dave.
Well, no, it's fine. So that's what people get from this is they get a system that has been created by two people who have, between the two of us, about 70 years of experience in building different types of teams that require collaboration and then also have to operate in a real world.
Okay.
So you can't just do whatever you want. You know, you have to adjust for, you know, the crazy that you can't control. And, but we all go to work wanting to do something awesome.
Yeah.
To get value produced, to be proud of what we've done and to know that we've made an impact. And that is what this course is providing.
Okay. So I have a whole bunch of questions. I do want to mention one thing, though. You've talked about visual systems, but you haven't said JIRA or whatever. That's intentional. I just want to make sure people hear that. When you're talking about a visual system, could you give like a quick rundown of what you mean in case they're not clear on that?
Okay. So a visual system, if you cannot see your work, then you are blind to it. And that's bad if you're co-located, but it's really bad if you're remote, because then not only are you blind to it, but then you're also estranged from the people who could at least give you some hints.
Okay.
So at a basic level, we want to see the work that is planned, the work that is in progress, the state of that work that's in progress, and the work that's been completed, and how happy we are with the quality or the outcome of that work.
Okay.
We also want to be able to see any problems that we're currently solving, any specific endeavors. Like right now at Modus Institute, we're trying really hard to get a new calendaring system. So Mark has been leading the charge on that calendaring system. And so we have all of that stuff visualized in our Obeya, which is a central location where all of the information is about the operations of Modus Institute. And so that visualized
the hell out of that work, by the way. So Jim's probably tired of seeing all the stickies that I'm putting up there. So,
and so the beautiful thing about that is that we, you know, we'll get together and we'll do some work as a group. We'll set up what Mark's going to do on his own. Okay. And then when Mark is off doing something on his own and he's changing those stickies saying, you know, I've investigated this, this looks good, this looks bad, this is now turned green, this is now turned red, whatever.
Right.
Here's some notes about this. We're still collaborating, even though Mark is working on his own.
Okay.
And that for me is a key thing about the visualization of work, is that it means that we're all together, even if we're apart.
Yeah,
and that is crucial for not just distributed teams, but all teams, and for groups who are trying to reassure upper management of their ROI. So it's fun to villainize or demonize or otherwise-ize upper management, but they're like desperately trying to keep the company from folding.
Yeah.
And so some of them are jerks. We'll just, but you know, that's humans. Humans are sometimes jerks, but in the end, their job is to make sure that the company doesn't expire.
Sure.
And our job isn't to just do that work. Our job is to make sure that we're communicating up to them so they have the information they need to make good decisions. And then we can start going to them and saying things like, you know what? You're withholding information, you're withholding the ability to make decisions, you're doing this, you're doing that. Since we've given you all of this information, we expect a quid pro quo there, and we expect to get that information flowing back.
Okay. Yeah,
and actually, in the course, we show a few different visual management systems that some are on a board, some are not.
Okay.
And I'll just... Some may be surprised about one of the visualizations I show in one of the lessons, but it comes from my own house. I'll put it that way.
Okay. So I wanted to ask a question. I was going to ask a question a few minutes ago that I think you both just kind of sort of sideways answered. But if it's an organization that doesn't have a lot of trust, like if I'm in a place where they are like putting keystroke stuffs on our keyboards and stuff like that, and they think we're just... it's very theory X. They don't trust us. I was going to ask, and I'm sort of assuming that the RE is part of this, but how you can use this course to rebuild the trust within your team or with management. Mm. I mean, I would say
establish before I would say rebuild in that
okay,
instance.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, but there's a lack of it. And
right.
By designing, going through this program, designing it together, they're going to foster.
So there was the way that an experience that I had at a unnamed major telecommunications and internet company based in Philadelphia in a giant building that looks like a robot.
With a really big TV screen.
the experience that we had there was we came in, we set up a collaborative system in a group. We warned the vice presidents in charge of that group that they would, even though they were hiring us to do this work, they would undermine the work and then they would get negative reaction for that. And that's what happened. The system went up, the productivity went up, happiness went up, all of the metrics went up except one, which was people started to ignore the senior vice presidents. And so the senior vice presidents came in and said, hey, we're not getting the reports that we're expecting from you.
We're going to shut you down. Producing stuff. Stop doing that.
Yeah. And there, and people are like, you don't need those reports anymore because we've worked right past them. And they're like, systematically we need the reports. So we're shutting this down. They had an immediate 20% attrition and everybody's like, and that was the story for a long time. But then the story later was that they came back and re-implemented everything over time. So that is my hopeful statement is that if you're in a situation where there is a low trust culture or an extremely bureaucratic culture or a culture that is overly heavy on the management side, that's the system that you currently have.
Yeah.
And you can't wish it away
with
a new system. But what you can do is go through the right environment exercise. And as you're going through it, view reality and then view what you can actually change.
Okay.
And make a future state where you're like, what would be my optimal, beautiful future state? And then just start to strategize, start to figure out what is the way to build trust with this person? What's the best way to build trust with this role? What is the best way to get rid of this strain of string of paperwork that we have to do? And then build that without being dogmatic.
Sure.
Right. So don't come in and say, I'm a super agile. And then after a while, they're going to be like, I'm kryptonite agile.
Yeah.
So should they have honored that need for that report and found a way to include the informational request that report would be making so that created safety for that senior person? Should that have been part of?
So the answer is yes. And we tried to do that at the beginning.
Okay.
By saying to them, here's where the teams are migrating. You need to change these reports to suit. Okay. And then they said, these reports have to stay this way. And we're like, is that because of Sarbox or is that because of, why is that? And there was literally no reason.
Well, it's in the SDLC.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about it was that no one, as you might guess, no one ever actually used those reports except when something looked red. And the new course of work would make certain metrics look perpetually red because they were no longer relevant.
Yeah.
So one of the things that had to happen there was a certain amount of, I don't want to say the word education, but that the system had to run in a suboptimal state for a while for people to actually watch that relationship happen over time.
Okay.
Until people could figure out a way to say, okay, we can change this or we can move this or this would be a good idea. And it also gave, because you got to remember, in organizations like this, the team now becomes the pointy-haired boss.
Yeah.
So the team shows up and surprises the bosses with a culture change as opposed to the other way around. And that it works the exact same way, you know. So that after a while, the bosses were like, wow, okay, so if we really do collaborate on these things, then they don't hurt as much.
Yeah.
So that education can go either way. It's a human thing. It's not a power struggle thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It's and Dave, you know this from your work too. You know, some improvements will ripple out.
Yeah.
And you know, do they hit a wall and bounce back, or you know, do they kind of settle across the organization? Yeah.
Okay. So I have one more question for you guys. And just to prepare you, after this question, I'm going to ask you, you know, what else people need to know about the course. But you talked a few minutes ago about management wanting to squeeze more work out of people and how that's not a healthy thing. And I was thinking about the fact that as a remote worker who works on a variety of different things, one of my challenges is I'm always trying to squeeze more productivity out of myself, sometimes to my own detriment. So I'm wondering, when you get people like that in the course, how does it speak to that for individuals who are their own pointy-haired boss?
I think that Mark and I both have a story about that. So I'm going to be super short about that then. When we operate as a team, mm-hmm. The team cares for the team members, I guess is the most humane way I can put it. The most business-like way I can put it is the team becomes its own governance object.
Okay.
And so what will happen is two things. One, you will be pressured to do more work mm-hmm. because more people will have more questions for you. And that will satisfy that need to be a hero person for a little while. But then over time, the team is going to notice, like, when you get snippy mm-hmm. or when you're not available or things like that. And then we will then it self-governs in the other direction to figure out ways to do that. So just because of the way Modus Institute was set up, I ended up being the bottleneck for almost everything that was going on. And we have, I'm grateful to say, worked very hard to make that mm-hmm. not the case anymore. You know, there's still things that I or Tony Ann are responsible for. But because we've set up this right environment, we've been able to set up situations where people now can take full ownership of something and not worry about what Jim thinks.
Okay.
And in a strange way, that is stopping Jim from engaging in the behavior that you just talked about.
Okay.
Yeah. And sort of a related story with the same team is getting the team to not only self-govern on work, but also kind of maintaining the health of the system in the individuals.
Okay.
So as an example, you know, we're recording this on a Thursday. Mm-hmm. Earlier this week, Jim just kind of off the cuff told me, man, I haven't had a vacation in a while. I was thinking about taking a 3-day vacation. And then just yesterday, he goes, oh, well, we can meet Thursday or Friday. I said, no, we can't meet Friday. He goes, why? I said, because you told me you were going to take Friday off, so I'm not going to meet with you. So that's the kind of thing that you want to build within that self-governing team, is they're not only governing
the work.
People
that actually care for each other?
Yeah, and they watch out for each other. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm just reiterating, Jim, I'm not talking to you tomorrow. So
what's really cool about that is it's sort of like, and I'm sure that some people don't like the term accountability partner. I'm assuming you guys are not huge fans of it, but the trust is that the people in my system will care for me even when I fail to do it for myself. We'll lift each other up in that way.
Yeah.
If Jim plans to work on Friday, Mark won't let him.
Yeah, I'll go with humane partner. I think it's a
humane
better
partner. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So what do people need to know about the course?
Well, it is available now.
get noises in there for that part.
I don't know.
It's live. So
the first thing that I would say is that the way that we released the course was in a good, agile, lean startup fashion. Okay. We released the course where Mark and I would finish a module like maybe every 2 weeks, and then we would drip that out to the people who had signed up. We had our test market that bought early, and they came in and participated in a very nice way. And so the first thing that people can expect is that this is a system that was designed by a remote team mm-hmm. for remote teams, or a distributed team for distributed teams in a distributed way, using the most awesome practices of Lean and Agile and the things that fall into that. So we actually successfully built an entire system out of the components.
Okay.
That we're talking about. So this is talking the talk, walking the walk, balking the balk, and chalking the chalk. The other bit is that in a couple of weeks, and this will probably go up live on the site either later today or on Monday, okay. we're doing a thing called a power up. And that power up is going to basically be dedicated time with me and Mark and a group.
Okay.
Where we're going to get together either monthly or every other week, and we're going to talk about this stuff, because taking a course is great, talking to us in the course is great, mm-hmm. but individual interaction at this time where things are they're changing quickly and they're yeah. confusing, and it's hard to know what to do with our teams.
Right.
That's the main thing that you're going to get out of this class, whether it's study at your own pace or with the power up. Is a lot of interaction with people around the world who are actively trying to deal with this world where Lean doesn't fit too well, Agile doesn't fit too well,
yeah.
Safe doesn't fit too well, Kanban doesn't fit too well, but we need to create something that fits our reality.
Yeah. And as we have those interactions with folks, we're already thinking of other power-ups we might add that people can add on if it makes sense for them and where they're at, yeah. or if not, they can catch them later.
Cool. All right. So I'm going to have links to all this stuff in the show notes so people can find out where to sign up. Mark, what if they want to get in touch with you? What's the best way to do that?
Easiest way is through my website, markkilby.com. They okay. can email me at mark@markkilby.com as well, but you'll find me on LinkedIn as well as Mastodon.
All right. And Jim?
I am Jim Benson on LinkedIn. And that's actually probably the best place to get a hold of me right now. Or okay. you can join Modus Institute at modusinstitute.com for free and chat with me directly just by sending me a DM. And I am super available there.
Cool. And you can catch me there too. So,
all right. And thank you all. Thank you both for being a part of this and creating the course. Everybody who's got questions about distributed teams, you should go check this out. And I just want to give a plug to the community, because I am part of that community, and it is something that I find to be very, not just supportive, but it's like fuel. You all have meetings you go to, groups you work with that kind of drain you. This is the exact opposite. It always fills me up and encourages me to do more stuff. So I'm grateful to you for creating it. So
cool. Beautiful.
Right. Good.
We're good.
Cool. Thank you.
If you learn to work the old way, but the new way is what you need. My job's to